Welcome in, Shoot Around Podcast, WGN and WGN Plus. Third edition of this little shoot around. Sam Panionovich and Barstool Big Cat in the house, fresh off a cool trip down to the state of Florida in Tampa Bay. And I'm surprised you're still alive because there was a lot of vitriol floating around.
Florida's the worst. I keep saying it, and I know some people will say, you know, it's not actually the worst. It really is the worst. Tampa Bay, I'll give credit to their hockey fans. They were actually a lot better than I thought going into it. The arena was bumping, and they had a great fan group called Sticks of Fire, which actually they kind of were like almost a European soccer club feel. They were doing chants before. They did a march into the stadium. But Tampa Bay as a city, no bueno. I'm not a fan. It's just you're living in a swamp with old people and
lots of
hillbillies.
Concrete.
Yeah, it's just not it's not the real world. So I'm happy to be back in the real world. And the game experience in Tampa Bay wasn't awful. I'll say this: the Jumbotron, they use the Jumbotron way too much down there. Like it was almost like an NBA game. You know how when you go to NBA game, it's every 2 seconds is the Jumbotron. That was what Tampa Bay was like. But other than that, great trip. Strip club capital of the world.
Yeah, well, and you would ask people, where should you go to watch the game? What should you check out? And you just get bombarded with requests and names for strip clubs. So.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you want to sum up Tampa Bay in one experience, it's that every single person you talk to will mention that it's the strip club capital of the world and tell you which strip club to go to. So that's, when you're hanging your hat on that, it tells you a lot.
Lots to get to today on the show. We've got the Blackhawks and Lightning in the Stanley Cup Final. LeBron James dominant in Game 2 as the NBA Finals are now even at one game apiece. We'll bring in Barstool Chief, your good friend and a friend of the show here, in the second half, and he'll break down a lot more X's and O's. He'll hang around for the mailbag. We've got some second page stuff. Brett Jackson, Alan Poppy across the glass, they're helping us out as well here on the shoot-around. But we have to start with last night's game. Obviously, two late goals for Tampa Bay after the Blackhawks had taken a 2-1 lead, and this is just a crippling loss. I think more surprising than anything that Tampa was able to sneak out there. I mean, the Blackhawks were one of the most dominant teams at home in the postseason.
And that was one of the best crowds I've heard maybe ever at the UC. That 5-on-3 penalty kill was that the roof felt like it was going to come down through our TV. And, you know, obviously you were there, so you could tell us more about how loud the crowd was. But that was, I think, part of the stunning aspect of it, that the crowd was so loud. The Blackhawks were all over them for stretches of the game. They were missing wide open nets. And you thought that they would win, and then it just kind of suddenly, well, there go the Lightning. They score, and it's almost game over. Bishop is playing on one leg. And you thought that the Blackhawks had all the momentum in the world, and it all just – they were minus 165 last night. Did not see that loss coming.
I knew some shops, guys that have been taking bets here for 10 years, they were shading it as high as minus 220 for the Hawks.
That's
crazy. People were still level-heading it all over the place because they thought the Blackhawks just couldn't lose, and I think that's the problem here in Chicago. Fans don't know who to blame. They start pointing fingers at either Corey Crawford or Joel Quenneville or, oh, my God, Patrick Kane doesn't have a goal yet, trade him. The unfamiliarity with the sport really shines through the further and further the Blackhawks go.
Well, yeah, and people freaking out. It's crazy to me. Blackhawks were down 2-1 last series against the Ducks. They were down 3-2 against the Ducks. They won the Stanley Cup Final in 2013 down 2-1 against the Bruins.
3-1 to the Red Wings that year also.
3-1 against the Red. You'd think that a veteran team like this would get the benefit of the doubt when they have their backs to the walls. It's unbelievable. So I agree. The sky was falling today, both on Twitter, radio, internet. I think everyone should take a step back. We'll hear from Chief in a few minutes, and he'll tell you why we should take a step back. But this team is nails. This team is money. They have the veteran edge. I'm not worried. Obviously, you'd rather be up 2-1 than down 2-1. That's a little hockey analysis for you. But I'm not worried.
No must-win game four? Is game four a must-win?
I said that even if they lose on Wednesday and Saturday, I still like their chances. Some people didn't catch that joke. But I guess it's a must-win. I still think they would be able to come back from down 3-1, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah, well, Todd Furman doesn't agree. We'll get into that later on with Chief. More hockey news here, and this is from the upper steps of the hockey world. NBC Sports Chairman Mark Lazarus, who is a marketing whiz. He made news today. Deadspin posted the article that he is now pushing NHL players to shave their playoff beards because they are, quote, getting in the way of marketing. That the only time that the whole nation is watching the sport of hockey, you have these barbarian-type beards, and he thinks it's time to shake it up, or shave them off, for that matter.
I actually see, I totally understand his point. He has a good point. I don't want the beards to go away because it's something unique to hockey that's kind of fun when you get to the playoffs. But he has a good point because these guys are playing with, you know, visors, helmets, crazy beards,
black eyes.
If Steven Stamkos walked down the street in Chicago, how many people would recognize him?
Good question.
If Steph Curry walked down the street, how many people would recognize him?
A lot more than Steven Stamkos.
I think that's really what the pressure comes from, is that the NBA and the NHL compete against each other this time of year, and the NBA is killing the NHL as they do every year. You know, you got to take a step back, though, obviously, and realize that the NHL, what was it, like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, they were on the Oxygen Network. So at least they're making progress. It's still embarrassing that a team like Chicago can be in the Stanley Cup Final and the game is on NBCSN and not regular NBC. But they are making progress, and what he's saying is it counts. You know, he's not a hockey guy. He's a guy who's trying to get more viewers to watch, and from that perspective, he has a point.
And he also thinks that the players would make more money in deals.
Oh, I'm sure they would.
Advertisements and be on billboards and things like that. The one guy that I did feel bad for throughout the entire process, though, was Chicago Sun-Times Blackhawks beat writer Mark Lazarus, Lazerus, as opposed to the NBC Sports chairman Mark Lazarus, Lazarus. And I guess Laz, the Hawks writer, has just been getting crushed today.
I mean, this is definitely a meatball kind of argument here, because whenever you get into tradition and things that people are used to, they're going to get upset and riled up. But if you take a step back, what he says is not that crazy. He wants these guys are basically, they're no different than being on a sitcom or a drama series, because they're, you know, primetime slot on a weeknight. Could you imagine having a drama series with your leading actor wearing a helmet and a huge beard? So I get what he's saying. I don't want it to happen, but I get what he's saying.
Now, there are people who will continue to drive that tradition stake into the ground, though, and say, I can't believe it, and think of the kids, and the kids love the beards, and there's the beard contests on the websites, and people win cash prizes and things like that. Does it really make the sport more fun? No, it doesn't really change anything.
Well, I'll tell you, the one aspect that is more fun is guys like Sidney Crosby, who can't grow beards, and then we can all sit back and laugh at them, because that's
the Tara Vinen?
Yeah, well, Tara Vinen, I'm giving Tara Vinen, this is my Homer biased coming through. I'm giving Tara Vinen the benefit of the doubt here, because he's 20, so he might not have hit puberty yet. But Sidney Crosby, I mean, he has no excuse. Every single year, he's got that awful, awful, dirty mustache. So, and that's fun to laugh at those guys.
You can tweet at him, at Barstool Big Cat. I'm at SP Shoe. Let's move now to basketball, where you have an NBA Finals series. One game apiece, the Cavs take game 2, 95-93. And how about this performance from LeBron? 39 points. Oh, by the way, 16 rebounds, 11 assists. He missed 24 shots, but he's playing without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. And despite J.R. Smith's efforts to try and lose that game and make Golden State go up 2-0, LeBron gave another all-time performance at the greatest stage.
Wildly inefficient. Wildly inefficient.
That's the point, though.
Kidding.
That's what he's got to do.
No,
he's empty the clip.
He's been incredible. I will not discredit how good of a player LeBron is. He's obviously, if you put him on any team in the East, they'd probably be able to win the East. Any team. Like, even if you put him on the Knicks this year, I bet you they'd be able to win the East. So what he's able to do with basketball, you know, with a basketball team of guys who really shouldn't be in the NBA Finals is unbelievable. I still think that the Warriors trying to make LeBron shoot 35 shots to score 40 points is the right strategy, because no one else on the court can get their own shot.
And it's a damn tough strategy, too. If you're Steve Kerr, you have to be watching what LeBron's doing throughout the games and go, oh boy, maybe I want to shake it up. Maybe I like to do something else and make somebody else beat me. But it's showing that it does work. At least it keeps games close.
Right. Well, and Steph Curry is not going to – I would think that Dellavedova is not going to shut down Steph Curry every single game this series. I did see a stat out there, though, that ever since he fell against the Rockets, he hasn't been shooting well. So that's something to look at. But I do think that this is the way you have to let LeBron shoot this many shots and guard everyone else straight up, knowing that they can't take you off the dribble. If you guard everyone else straight up, they're not going to make shots.
That's, yeah, that's a fair point there. Now, I'm tired of having to be a LeBron apologist. I'm not by nature, but I've become one because of how much I have to defend this guy. It's like, if you don't appreciate what that guy does, you're just not watching the same game.
All right, so here's my problem, though. Every single time we get into a LeBron game and then the Jordan and LeBron debate comes up and people like you, the LeBron apologists, start saying, well, you shouldn't have to compare him to Jordan. He's great in his own right. Screw that. I'm comparing him to Jordan because that's what I watch sports for. I do it for debate. I do it because I want to see LeBron match up against the best in the world and the best that's ever been in the NBA. And I'm going to put them in the same sentence, and I'm going to say Michael Jordan's better than LeBron right now. And anyone who tries to tell me that I'm not allowed to do that, that I have to just sit back and appreciate LeBron for being great, get out of here.
This is a week after you said he was a top three player of all time.
He is.
Okay.
But my point is, all I see on Twitter is you can't compare LeBron and Michael Jordan every single time LeBron has a good game. Why don't you just appreciate LeBron for who he is? Fine. But I'm going to keep comparing him because that's what I do with sports. That's what sports fans do. They sit at the bar and they yell at their friends. I've had this Michael Jordan-LeBron debate with every single one of my friends. I think every person in America has at some point. So it's something that clearly everyone's talking about. Why can't we talk about it?
I didn't say we couldn't talk about it. I just say in the current landscape of the game where people still drill him for missing 24 shots, you know, line 18 times.
Yeah, those you have to separate it. You know that, like, the Skip Bayless's of the world, they're doing it just to needle people. He, you know, I think Skip Bayless gave LeBron a C+ for a game two.
Oh, okay.
Which, I mean, that's, yeah, if you don't understand what Skip Bayless is doing there, then I'm sorry. You shouldn't even be on Twitter. You shouldn't be on the internet because you are in the deep end and you need, like, a life raft. But, people can pick apart the off-court stuff because he does do the stuff that just drives you insane.
He was responsible for 61 of the 95 points. So, yeah, that's C+ in my book.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I've always said that there's nothing that you can take away from LeBron's game at this point. I'm saying he's the second best player of all time. I still love to root against him, and I still love to see him fail. And if that's wrong, I don't want to be right.
Before we get into Chris Sale, actually, let's play this piece of audio. Let's change gears here. Something happened in a truck. Was it outside the East Coast? Did you see this? Actually, did you blog about this? What happened last night during the Blackhawks and Lightning game? It was about the first period, maybe early second period.
Happening right now, a swine surge. More than 2,000 piglets are being wrangled after a semi overturned in Xenia.
Listen, this is the stuff.
Worst possible time for
worst possible time to have that happen, because truck tipping over in Ohio and dumping 2,200 piglets. That's why I get up in the morning. I get up in the morning for stories like that. And so the fact that it happened during the Blackhawks game was just absolutely devastating. I mean, I needed to be on that from the second it happened. I don't know if people saw the clips, but it was hilarious. People were the police, and I think they just had just regular people coming over and helping, just picking pigs out of the forest, like one by one, just grabbing them by the back legs and throwing them back in the truck. I'm sure that they'll end up on our plates sooner or later, but it was great, and I'm still upset. I'm actually upset at the producer for bringing that up.
Well, I thought that it was funny that we should bring back your tweet in all caps. I don't have time for this.
It was in the middle of the Blackhawks game. Like, that's the only time, any other time that happens. If it happened at 4 a.m, I've done crazier. I've been at horse rescues in California at 3 a.m. So these are the things I live for, and the fact that it happened during the Stanley Cup Finals. I don't know if I want to blame the Blackhawks or the pigs. I think I'm going to blame the Blackhawks.
Not the Lightning, though.
No. Why the Blackhawks, if they had, well, I guess both teams, if they didn't play seven-game series the series before, maybe the schedule would be a little different.
So last night, Brett and I are up in the booth, and the Blackhawks are in, like, the third period. You know, it's 2-1, Hawks are leading, and I look to my right, and he's watching the game. Of course, we have the radio broadcast in our headsets, but he's got another plan, and that is to track the swings and misses off of Chris Sale's fastball and slider and changeup, because he is now the first Sox pitcher to K at least 10 guys in 4 straight starts. The first guy since Randy Johnson in 2001 to get at least 20 swings and misses in four straight games.
So what did he end up with last night? How many swings and misses?
I think it was around 23 or 24.
That's unreal. He's on a different dimension right now. I mean, these are the moments where you have to. It's like Kershaw, Bumgarner last year in the World Series. When these guys are pitching like that, and you know that no one can touch them, no matter what. I mean, the White Sox have been. What's their record now? They're in last still. Correct?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I'm
pulling
obviously
up the
not
hide.
A White Sox fan, so I don't follow the team very closely. But I parlayed the White Sox and the Blackhawks last night.
Oh, that's good. So
yeah.
that's the rare cachet there with the White Sox in a parlay.
Yeah, Sale's a money pitcher. He's a guy who every time he goes out, if you bet, I mean, he's going to have big juice, but he's been so good. And you'd hope that something would rub off on Samardzija there, huh?
One of the worst trades, I think, in recent memory.
Well, what about which one?
Well, the one that the Cubs made was worse. Because I know. Because Addison Russell, you get Addison Russell there for Samardzija. The Sox will get maybe, you know, a third of the player if they try and ship him now, because the stock is all the way in the basement.
I can't fully remember last year. It happened on July 4th. And I remember I was at a barbecue, and it happened. I can't remember. Pete, was there anyone out there who thought that was a bad trade for the Cubs? Because we need to find those people and kick them out of sports. Because that is – Billy Beane is waking up in the middle of the night saying Theo's name after that trade.
That's like when they tried to acquire, not the magnitude a little bit different, but when they thought that a old hobbled Frank Thomas would win him the AL in like 2007. Remember that?
Yeah,
when Bean gambled, rolled the dice, brought in Big Frank?
He does it every few years, and you got to respect going for it, because obviously they made the playoffs, and if it wasn't the Royals. Yeah, the Royals doing the Royals things in that one-game playoff, they would have had a legitimate chance. But yeah, Samardzija's been really bad, and I don't know where is he going to end up after this year?
You know some team's going to throw $17 million a year at him.
Yeah.
You know that'll happen. That's the way it works.
For starting pitching, yeah. I mean, if James Shield is getting, you know, whatever he got. So, the White Sox, you would hope that he would turn it around. And I have him on my fantasy team because I'm still a loyal Shark fan. But that's Sale is all they got right now.
Two picks, Chicago style last night. The White Sox take Carson Fulmer with their first pick. That was the 8th overall. And then the Cubs take outfielder Ian Happ, who was 9th overall. So now in back-to-back years, the Sox steal Carlos Rodon and Fulmer away from the Cubs. Literally, the two best college pitchers back-to-back years now are headed to the South Side, at least to the system.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed. I wanted Tyler J to go to the Cubs just because that's a guy who, with his stuff, he might be able to help a playoff team come September. The Theo, he just is sticking with... He's going to keep loading up the system with hitters.
Straight up hitters.
And, you know, we now have, I think, 16 players that could play, you know, 8 positions out there.
Yeah.
So
5 outfielders. You've got like 6 guys that can play short.
Yeah, I know. So, in Theo we trust. I would have liked to see a pitcher. I think if Fulmer or Tyler J were there, the Cubs would have taken a pitcher. But you can't. What are you going to say? You can't. Obviously, the Cubs are in the right direction, so you can't fault them.
Well, now you pay for pitching, or you flip some of those guys because you can't play them all.
Right.
You know that. I mean, this is a bad game of collecting too much. He's being a hoarder almost.
He is a little bit of a hoarder.
You can't use them all.
He's like the guy in your fantasy draft who takes like 3 quarterbacks and then just sits on a couple of them and waits till everyone has a crisis.
Which, yeah, that's fair. And somebody had tweeted last night that this is the place where hard-throwing right-handers from Vanderbilt come to thrive. With Fulmer coming and obviously your boy Jake Cutler. Did want to throw out there, though, that to the foreign media members – and during the regular season, there are like 2 television cameras in the Blackhawks dressing room, maybe like 10 reporters. There were 25 cameras last night down in the Hawks dressing
room. It was packed.
And about 120 people. And I got labeled in the back of the head with one of those heavy over-the-shoulder cameras from somebody from TSN. And Brett and I are trying to, you know, you just stick your arm out there. But when you have somebody, and Corey Crawford's locker is literally right when you walk in. So they were blocking off the doorway. And as I tried to walk through around Crawford just to get into the room, somebody did one of those 9-to-3 turns, and I got it right in the back of the head. And he says,
"You're a warrior. You're here today."
I'm sorry. You're sorry?
Was a Canadian guy?
Yeah, TSN.
Well, he didn't mean it, so what are you going to do?
Those things weigh like 150 pounds.
Let me ask you a question, because you were in the locker room after the game,
yep.
And I think, obviously, you know, we don't get from Barstool's perspective, we never get into the locker room. Were there any players that they just don't get any media around them?
Well, usually there is the meeting after the game. Everybody comes off the ice, takes off their tape and their pads and their skates, and they throw them down. And then there's a player lounge right next door. So the ones that either had good games, in Crawford's case, maybe not so good of a game, they face the media. But usually they make, in the playoffs, about 7 or 8 players available. Last night it was Taves, Kane, Hossa, Crawford, Van Riemsdyk, Keith, and maybe 1 or 2 more. But it's not like you walk in there and everyone's in their locker room. They give them time to disperse.
So who was the guy who had the most people around him? Was it Crawford?
Tough call there.
It's about the same. I mean, between Crawford, Kane, and Taves, it's pretty much
right.
About the, you know, they kind of stagger those guys a little bit, so you have a chance to get in and get audio from all of them, but those guys are always packed.
And then Taves is doing interviews in French after the American ones are done.
He can do it all.
Hossa's doing them in Czech, and there's like 100 people from the Czech Republic here to talk to
Hossa. Have you guys seen, you know, this is obviously in the same vein, the post game for the NBA when LeBron brings out, he'll just bring out like a different buddy every time who just gets no questions. He brought out Tristan Thompson after game one, I think. I think one reporter asked him a question out of maybe 13 questions. So I feel bad for that guy. He just has to sit there. LeBron, I don't know what he's doing. He can't go out by himself. I mean, I guess he used to go out with Dwayne Wade and Dwayne Wade would get some questions, but it's ridiculous.
We finally got an upgrade in style for Matthew Dellavedova. No more black V-neck undershirt and the green jacket that he wore for like the entire first 2 rounds. He had a suit on almost last game, so that's good for him.
And I can't stand Dellavedova, but I have to respect him now. What he did to Steph Curry, and what he is the quintessential guy who's not, when he's not on your team, you absolutely hate him, and he is probably just an absolute legend with Cavs fans.
He's Kirk Heinrich 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah,
he is all over the mailbag, too. So we'll get to Matthew Dellavedova, I'm sure. We'll bring in Barstool Chief next. One more thought, though, on the NBA postgame pressers. Did you catch the guy? I think he was from China.
Yes, asking LeBron after game one.
What happened in the overtime? You only had a 2 point.
Yeah, that was the best. It was just brutally, like, to the point. Hey, LeBron, you had 2 points. Like, what's the deal with that? You're probably going to need to score more.
And he just stared in that guy's direction.
It was unbelievable.
What happened in overtime?
Yeah, I need Bobby Ramos back. But yeah, the post game press conferences for the NBA, it's must watch TV. Obviously, when LeBron wins, I don't watch it because then I want to kill myself. But when he loses, it is something else.
He's Barstool Big Cat. I'm Sam Panayotovich. We'll talk some more Blackhawks hockey, some X's and O's with Chief, who's in the house. This is the Shootaround, WGN Radio and the WGN Radio family. You know those fingers. That's Tommy, who I think you guys made an internet celebrity after he couldn't successfully play Chelsea Dagger. But how many views on that page?
It's like 150,000, and it was a video that in 2013 had maybe 22. It's weird. It's a little weird. Every now and then I'm like, I wonder what this family thinks that their kid is just on our site. And Tommy's got to be, I don't know, like 13 now. So I'm still waiting for the day when they pull it down.
You should get some royalties from there. So should friend of the studio, Barstool Chief, one of your cohorts over at Barstool Chicago. What's up, Chief?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
I guess where do I start here? You told me in last year's postseason when the Hawks went down 2-0 to St. Louis to stay calm. You told me this year after they went down to Nashville 2-1, stay calm. Same thing against Anaheim. Here they are, similar situation, down 2-1, this time in the Stanley Cup Final, and your message to me is what?
Stay calm, but stay woke, too, because this is the best team the Hawks have played, I would say, other than L.A. Last year. This is a different type of challenge than they've had so far this playoff, so they need to wake up. But I think the Hawks, when they find their top game, are still going to be the better team on the ice.
So let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Down 2-1, if you had to point to one specific thing that is keeping the Hawks from being successful in this series so far, what would it be?
I think they're making it pretty easy on Bishop. There hasn't been a ton of net presence, and when they have gone to the net, they've buried it. We saw that in the first two games when Hosa went to the net. It might have been goalie interference, but it got the job done on the Seabrook bomb. We saw it. Andrew Shaw camped out in front, got a goal that way. Tara Vinen going to the net with Kruger in front there. So they've had success when they do that, and they really made it hard on Bishop in the first period. They just weren't able to capitalize, and then as the game went along, they got a little bit perimeter oriented, which is something that's given them problems in the past. When they're struggling offensively, it seems to be the same problem. So they had the puck plenty last night. They had plenty of shots, but they just came from too far out with not enough net presence. And it's not rocket science. The Hawks can, it's whether or not you want to go to the net. So they need to do a better job of doing that, and then they should be okay.
Let's cut through this red tape here. Have they brought it yet? Have they brought their best game through three?
No, and I think we saw their best game at the end of the Anaheim series. In game 6 and 7, they were fantastic. They were essentially perfect those last two games. So we haven't seen them ratchet it up to that level. I think it's almost like they don't hate Tampa enough. Like there's not enough venom out there on the ice, and maybe they say, oh, this is an Eastern Conference team, and they're not quite at the level they need to be. And we've seen them have that problem before. I think they kind of ease their way into the Nashville series, ease their way into the Anaheim series, and it's like, oh my God, we're facing elimination. We better, lock it down.
Well, I was going to say that I saw a quote the other day about Patrick Kane saying that he likes to, it usually takes him a couple games to feel out a goalie. And Taze actually has been, last night he had a great game. Kane went, he didn't have a shot in game two. Last night he wasn't on, was he on the score sheet? I don't think he was on the score sheet.
Not on the score sheet. He had three shots in the first period and then nothing right. The rest of the way.
So do you think that my only concern is, this is a Stanley Cup final. Like you said, the Lightning are the best team that they've faced. Will it be too late? It's one of those situations where I know that they like to feel out a team. They like to feel out a goalie. But it feels like there's a little sense here. Like if you feel out anymore, it's over.
Well, I don't know how much you need to feel out Bishop when he can barely get across the crease. So start getting to the net and putting it challenging his feet a little bit, because he is struggling in there. So, Kane, I don't know what you're feeling him out. Look at him. Yeah. The guy is immobile in net. So you gotta, it's a desire thing. And Kane, he can be a little passive at times, and then still make things happen in a flash. So we definitely saw that in the Minnesota series, where he wasn't, he was putting up points, but he wasn't a dominant offensive player. The Hawks need him to be a dominant offensive player in this series, and we haven't seen it yet.
Chief is in the house with us here, WGN Plus, WGN Radio. It's the Shootaround with Big Cat and Sam Panayotovich. Now, I think Joel Quenneville said it best after the game, that we aren't getting enough pucks on net. And the most telling quote that he gave, the most telling piece of tape, was that we're just not good enough after goals. And this is something now 13 seconds after the Hawks take the lead. It's tied 2-2 on Andre Palat's goal. Not the first time we've seen this postseason. And I don't understand why it keeps happening when they can't keep a lead for more than a minute of hockey time.
Yeah, it's been a reoccurring theme the whole playoffs, it seems. Last night, a little bit different, I think. They had, you lose faceoffs, so that happens.
And but Kruger won that faceoff, didn't he?
Tampa Bay got possession pretty quickly. Like, that kind of happens off a center ice faceoff. And then before you know it, they have a normal entry, and they throw a bad angle shot out front, and Crawford kind of kicks it right in the middle. So I like Crawford. I don't want to call myself, like you, Sam, in the last segment, a Crawford apologist, but I think he's better than people give him credit for. He had some monster saves last night, but he does seem to give up those goals that you're like, my God, like that's a crippling type of goal.
Yeah, I was going to say that it feels like we've had, game one, he had a great game, only faced 22 shots, so game two, he lets up a goal he probably shouldn't let up against Tyler Johnson. And then game three, last night, that goal right after, the Blackhawks scored was something he should have had.
Definitely should have had. You could make the argument that he should have had the first one on Callahan too. So that's a quote-unquote, if you look at hockey metrics, that's a low-danger area. He's 40 feet out, slap shot. I mean, it was a great shot, bar down by Callahan, but ideally, your goalie has eyes on that the whole way. You'd think he'd be able to get a glove up on that, even though it was right by his ear. Maybe come out a little bit and challenge it a little bit more, cut down that angle. But But yeah, I'd say that the that Crawford needs to be better. I don't think he's been bad, but I think he does need to be better going forward.
I saw today you tweeted out what lines you would like to see tomorrow night for Wednesday's game four. You want Shaw on the second line with Kane and Richards, correct?
I do. I think, like I said before, Kane needs to be a little bit more assertive. So there are things that he can do to get himself more involved. But that line needs a guy that will go get him pucks. So Bickle hasn't been getting the job done in that regard. He came out pretty aggressive, had some hits in the first period when the Hawks had it going, but really faded away the rest of the night, and obviously hadn't played in the first two games because of vertigo. But Shaw has been a terror on the forecheck. So that's a guy that will go to the front of the net. He'll occupy a body, whether it's Hedman or Strahlman or somebody else, you know, Garrison. One of their D will have to sit there with Shaw. That creates space in the rest of the offensive zone for Kane and Richards to operate. And then he can go retrieve pucks on dump-ins and cycles and things like that to and get it back for Kane. So that line has been a little bit too much one and done. A shot from the perimeter and it's a face-off or it's going the other way in transition. So I'd like to see a guy that will really work to get the puck to skill guys, and he's done that on the fourth line, and he's been feeding it to Desjardins and Kruger, and that's great, but it's a little bit different when you're feeding it to your top guys.
There are two guys on this roster that are not only not producing in the current postseason, but they are limiting the chance of the Hawks getting anything back that is juicy in return if they're to be dealt next season. And you know, I'm talking about the guys that combine almost $10 million in cap hit, Patrick Sharp, Brian Bickle. I mean, Sharp with the two penalties in Game 2, that meat-headed play at the end of Game 3 that allows the game-winning goal. Bickle with a dumb penalty last night, although he did have a pretty solid first period. But these two guys are just depleting any value they once had.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to lose that much value on a Patrick Sharp. People know what he is. He's been a consistent goal scorer for the last 6 years. He's only got 2 years left on his term. I think that's a contract that will and a player that will still be attractive to teams this summer. So a bad playoff run after an injury-laden year I don't think is that big of a deal given his track record. But Bickle, his problem is that he's never really produced. So he had always been able to turn it on in the playoffs when he, you know, it's crunch time. He's more physical. He goes to the net. I think he's got some kind of shoulder injury. He left one of the games in the earlier series and went to the locker room and came back pretty quickly. But he's not producing. He's not ripping those wristers that we've seen him do in previous years, and he just hasn't been as effective as a player in front of the net either. So I think he's just not as strong on the puck, and that's been his biggest problem.
So put us back in a good state of mind here. Put a bow on it. Give us some optimism going forward for the rest of the series. What do the Hawks need to do to get back in this series, and do you think that will happen?
Yeah, so we saw Saad, Taves, Hossa. That was as good of a game as I've ever seen them play. So they were matched against Hedman for about 8 minutes last night and still dominated him. And when they got away from him, it was game over. So they worked really hard. They created good chances. They were dangerous all night. That is the best line in the series. So the triplets get a lot of love. Stamkos gets a lot of love. When those three guys are clicking, they're the best offensive line in the series, they're the best defensive line in the series, they're going to produce. And then we need the other guys to step it up. I think that this is it's right there for them. It's not anything that Tampa's doing that's too crazy. Hedman is a stud, yeah. Cedric Paquette is a much better player than I gave him credit for leading into the series.
Rookie, right?
He's a young player. He was drafted, I want to say, the same year as Teravainen in that same class. So he's a young guy. I think he's 20, 21 years old, something like that. So, yeah, he's a young player, but he's responsible defensively. He's had some big offensive moments as well. So, but I think that the line matchups in Game 4 will help again. I really think they need to jumble the lines a little bit and get Shaw up on that second line. I think that'll give the Hawks a spark. Kane has actually played very well with him in the past. They had that hustle and flow line last year with Shaw, Kane, and Saad.
Got him back into the Kings series.
Exactly. So I think that's something that they can go to. And then and I think that they have the talent. And I liked TVR last night, too, all things considered. He only played about 9 minutes. But he gave you more than Runblad. Comiskey was not good, so maybe you go Runblad and TVR for Game 4. But I think the Hawks have the talent, the experience. It's about really kind of digging it down and attention to detail. The game-winning goal last night, that's just a brain cramp. I mean, Sharp got caught watching Hedman go into the corner. Crawford got caught being way out of his net, super aggressive on a guy that was below the goal line. And then Comiskey let Paquette walk right across his face. So there are little things that when the Hawks are clicking and they're sharp mentally, that pass never gets completed, and the Hawks are heading the other way, and it's still a tie game. So I think that they haven't even come close to playing their top game, and they're still only losing by a hair. So I think if they can find their game, and maybe they are just out of gas, but if they can find their top game, they'll be all right.
We'll get to the Q&A, and we'll bring you in just a second. But I'm not panicking. I don't think anybody should panic right now. This is a solid hockey team that's been there before, done that before. That being said, if you were to rank your level of panic, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, where would you put it?
3.
3?
I really think that the Hawks are the more talented team, and it's just a matter of bringing it every shift. I mean, we saw in the first period they were faster. They were all over. I think the Bishop thing is going to – if he's going back in the net in game 4, he can't continue like this. He was very, it was painful to watch. I thought he would be yanked in between the first and second period. So if they're sticking with Bishop, gutsy performance, but that's going to come back to bite him eventually. Hopefully it's game 4.
Okay, so this first question I'm going to throw at you, Chief. This is from @DavidKursitz. He says, is it time to split up the second and third lines and maybe pair Kane and Tavo together, play them with Vermette?
I don't think you can have Kane and Tavo on the same line. Those guys are too similar. It's a fun thing for a power player, maybe 4-on-4. You get open ice and a lot of skill. But like I said before, that you need to have some semblance of balance on your lines. Tavo's not going in and retrieving pucks. Kane's not going down deep retrieving pucks. You need a guy who will be a little bit physical, go down, make a hit, create a turnover, and feed it to those guys. That's a power play line. That's a video game line. That's not a real life line. So I would mix up the lines. I wouldn't put Kane and Teräväinen together.
They were fun to watch though, 4-on-4 last night. Did you catch the stretch they were together?
It was unbelievable. Yeah,
that's like a Harlem Globetrotters lineup when those two guys are together. So going forward next year for overtime in 4-on-4, that's going to be unbelievable to watch if they do that.
But I always thought for playoff overtime they should go 4-on-4 for the first one, then 3-on-3, and then keep going down until it's just goalie and goalie.
That's the worst idea you've ever had.
I mean, that's the best idea I've ever had. That's how you get, you know,
for playoff overtime.
Screw shaving beards. Let's go. Let's do my idea.
That whole thing, like that guy thinking that beards are gonna get more viewers.
But I still understand what he's saying. I know I just saw I got killed for it on Twitter and in the comment section. But you have to realize he is correct in where he's coming from. That the face of the players is so important for bringing your brand, you know, and getting to new audiences.
J.R. Smith, the NBA kills the NHL in ratings. J.R. Smith has tattoos covering every single inch
you
of his
still
body.
You still know who he is.
It doesn't matter.
That has
matter.
Nothing to do with it. You still know exactly who he is and what he looks like. That's actually a perfect example. You know J.R. Smith, and he's not even good. You know him. If he walked in the door right now, but that's J.R. Smith. If someone else, you know, if someone on Tampa's second line, obviously you're a huge hockey guy, but if someone's on Tampa's second line walked in the door right now, I wouldn't be able to name him. So, you know, that's – and I watch both. So I'm saying for a casual fan – not a casual fan, but even a fan who watches every single game, you know, both NHL and NBA, you need it.
Yeah, I agree with the point that it would make them, the individual players, more money if you could see their faces. I don't think someone's tuning in because –
No, but once you recognize and you see him year after year – and I mean, there's a reason why Emmitt Smith used to take off his helmet when he scored a touchdown. That's Mark Lazarus would agree with Emmitt Smith.
This is from @Airbod. This one's for you, Kat. For the rest of your life, you have to pick one: burrito-sized hot dogs or hot dog-sized burritos.
Hot dog-sized burritos or burrito? Huh. I'd probably have to go burritos, knowing that the bet that I made that started the whole thing was, could you eat pizza or burrito for the rest of your life? And burritos are like the one meal you could probably eat for the rest of your life. So it's that. I mean, hot dogs, I eat a lot of hot dogs, and I'm starting to get a little concerned. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm getting a little concerned for my health.
Too much nitrogen.
Yeah, there are moments where I kind of like, all right, well, this is getting a little out of control, but I would probably go burritos.
You have a response to that? Hot dog-sized burritos or burrito-sized hot dogs?
The hot dog-sized or the burrito size hot dog doesn't even sound good to me. That's almost the hot dog size burrito is just like a
churro. Like
a, it's an easier way to eat a burrito. I almost think that that's an awesome idea.
Yeah,
like, it's like a burrito to go. No worries about spilling.
Throw those in my pockets. Yeah,
exactly.
Dave Farley wants to ask, I think, all three of us, do you think the 5-on-3 penalty kill last night when the Hawks killed a 5-on-3 Tampa Bay power play was one of the best plays you've ever seen? Stretch of plays.
How about people saying that it was ridiculous that the United Center was going crazy for that? That was so exciting. That was a 90-second 5-on-3. The fact that Tampa Bay didn't score was unbelievable.
I was standing up in my living room the whole time.
Yeah.
And so was the whole crowd. And I thought they had it after they killed that. I thought that's going to flip the game. Yep. Now the Hawks have it.
The problem was it happened too late in the period where there was only 2 minutes left in the period because that was a huge momentum swing. I'm still shocked that some people were trying to say that it was ridiculous United Center was that loud. That I've never seen a 90-second 5-on-3.
That's exactly how it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that I think that we would be critical of if we were watching Hawks in Nashville and Nashville was kind of sitting on their hands, be like, oh, these guys don't appreciate hockey. You should absolutely be on the edge of your seat or out of it.
Because a team should always score on a 5-on-3 for 90 seconds.
Especially that team.
Right.
With Johnson and Stamkos and Hedman. Like, the fact that they were able to kill that off and not really even be threatened was
incredible. A couple that went across, but other than that.
That was incredible.
Our engineer has an app on his phone where he can test the decibels of an arena or a music venue for loudness. And when the anthem is being sung by Jim Cornelison and the fans are into it, that is usually about 100 decibels. The end of the power play, it was 105.
I believe it.
Tells you just how loud it was.
That's just about as loud as I've ever heard.
In that building. Well, it's louder than the anthem, and you guys have been there for the anthem.
Right.
Yep.
So that's pretty telling there. At B. McMill 33, Cat, could Matthew Dellavedova lock you down?
Back him down, big
cat. Unfortunately, probably yes. He locked it. Did you see that play? It was a play in the fourth quarter when Draymond Green was in the post all alone with Dellavedova. Draymond Green ended up scoring off a rebound because of the height advantage, but Dellavedova locked him down the first shot. It was unbelievable.
He's got rugby strength.
He's a great defender. Yeah. I also found out today that Dellavedova owns the same kind of car as me, which I don't know if that's good for me or
bad for him.
Bad for him. Yeah, I don't know. So it's kind of weird.
He's on that rookie deal, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's – so I'm like a rookie. I'm a rookie in the NBA.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
That's exactly what you are. This one for Chief, more of an X and O style question from Johnny Cage. Why not play – Versteeg instead of Bickle?
I would play Versteeg instead of Bickle. So I think Bickle, he deserved to get a shot back in the lineup. I personally wanted to see that too. I wanted to see a big body in front of Bishop and some more physicality, some guy to bang with Hedman, win battles in the corners, and he just didn't really do it. So I think if you put Versteeg on that fourth line, hopefully you get the same work rate that you had with Shaw, Kruger, and Desjardins. And maybe a little bit more creativity. So, you know, you have the same amount of speed and maybe you get a little bit extra offensive oomph out of that fourth line that wasn't necessarily there with the current combo.
Chris Erica wants to ask Big Cat, did you really almost get beat up in Tampa Bay?
So when we were in break here, I was explaining it. There actually were two times where I came pretty close, and there were words exchanged between myself and a Tampa Bay fan. One of them, there was a fan who was taking pictures of me in video every time the Lightning score, which, you know, that's fine. I actually wrote a blog about it, a couple weeks ago, that there was a guy in a Ducks jersey and a Blackhawks fan was taking a picture of him after the Blackhawks had scored, and that's just part of being an away fan. He then followed me into the bathroom and was taking video of me going to the bathroom, and that's when the words were exchanged. Some not-so-nice words were exchanged, and then he kind of cooled down after that. So he was weird. He was also with his girlfriend, and it was strange that he was just so obsessed with me and not worried about the fact that his team had just scored.
I think that's Florida. That's the Florida factor, where people are just weird down there. Like, they probably think that that's acceptable behavior. They just don't know any better. They're used to getting arrested for weird stuff all the time. So that's a weird state. You just chalk that up to Florida. And we
were lucky. We had a couple guys next to us who were French-Canadian. So that, come on. They were the nicest guys in the world. So they didn't care.
Last order of business here. The guys have a piece of audio. This is from, is it a Cleveland TV anchor or a weatherman? Was it a weatherman?
Weatherman,
who had to sound off. He felt he had to sound off on the lack of fouls called on LeBron James.
All right, Chief Meteorologist Mark Johnson, you have been tracking some storms.
We have storms, but I want to tell you, first of all, what we've learned tonight, new NBA rules, this is no longer a foul. Oh, that's no longer a foul. We learned that tonight in the Golden State game. Thank you, Jeff. Actually, you should have come down and hacked me a little harder. You should have taken a saw and sawed off my arm. That is still not a foul. That's allowed. Yeah, it's not a foul anymore. Okay, so we're going to be consistent. Now, here we go.
I love it. I cry some more, Cleveland. I love that LeBron didn't get those calls because that's just the refs not respecting him at the end of the game. It was unbelievable.
And he traveled.
He did travel. So he travels. These guys travel most plays. But the fact that he wasn't getting some of those calls just put the biggest smile on my face because that is it. It really is. We know, watching the NBA, watching Michael Jordan in the 90s, the stars get preferential treatment. You just know that going into it, and he did not get preferential treatment.
And
in game
he normally
two.
Does. He does. Normally gets every.
He
call,
does, but he
that
wasn't.
Was so blatant.
Oh, so blatant,
right across his arms in a big spot. Too,
you know what killed me though? It did show me. I mean, this series is kind of. People always say, well, LeBron couldn't play in the 90s when, you know, guys would actually foul and hit each other. I mean, he's gotten beat up a little bit this series. He's just such a force of nature.
Almost, I mean, he's soft because that's the culture now. Like you said, everything is called. If he put 6'9", you put Karl Malone, basically, which is what LeBron is built like, with guard skills, he might just bully everybody
right
back in the 90s.
Right.
So it might actually help him.
It kills me that I have to admit that LeBron could easily take the fouls that the Bad Boy Pistons and stuff like that, you know, that threw at Michael Jordan.
And now LeBron is backing his way, bullying his way, throwing forearms all the way into the paint, and then he gets the little wrist foul. So
Keep shooting. Keep going with those inefficient nights, LeBron. I'll keep hating. And I know I'm a hater. You know what? I think that people should be able to hate openly like that.
And it's not about you don't respect LeBron. If LeBron would just shut up, no one would hate him. You would hate him?
Yeah.
Just
because he beats the Bulls all the time.
Well, I mean, and that's like a normal, but I think people around the country, doesn't matter who your team is, they hate LeBron because he won't shut up.
I agree with that.
He's so obnoxious. So that's the thing that separates him and Jordan more than anything else.
Closing thoughts. We'll let you take this one, Chief, since this is your baby. The Blackhawks down 2-1 in the Stanley Cup Final. Game 4 tomorrow night, which is Wednesday. Game 5 will be Saturday. Game 6, if necessary, have to say that, is on Monday.
It's going to be necessary. They're gonna win Game 4. I said Blackhawks in 6 before the series started. I'm sticking with that. I think the Lightning have their attention now. You said open this segment with stay woke. I think they're awake. So I think the Blackhawks are ready to go. A little bit concerned about Johnny Oduya, but I think that we'll see a few tweaks to the lineup perhaps, and then a little bit more attention to detail, and they'll be fine.
Anything I may have missed?
I'm going to say Blackhawks in 7. I do think that this is probably going to go Hawks win Game 4, Lightning Game 5, Hawks Game 6. And we all just sit there and die for Game 7 and in agony and hope that things turn our way.
I hope it goes Game 7 because one of my best friends is trying to take this girl out on their first date to a concert.
Mumford and Sons?
It might be Mumford and Sons.
It is, yeah.
Okay, so it's the same night as Game 7, and he is just like, I don't care who wins, just don't go 7 games because we're trying to talk to this girl for so long, but I think we are headed for that 7th game.
I'm done planning out the schedule. I already had it in my head. I was like, oh, yeah. Well, Saturday night, the Hawks are going to win the Cup with Old Town Art Fair. It's going to be an all-timer. And then it was like, well, now they'll win at home ice on Monday. I'm done. Let's just forget it. Let's just win the Cup. Who cares when it happens?
Best way to put it. For Barstool Big Cat, I'm Sam Panayotovich. Thanks for listening. You can follow him at Barstool Big Cat. I'm at SP Shoot. Thanks, Chief, for hopping in today.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, guys.
And you can follow all the things you may have missed at WGN Plus. Just search for The Shoot Around. You can check them out at Barstool Sports.com. We'll see you guys next week.